Reinvest in your wellness goals this September with savings on supplements. September 17th and 18th only, I'll be offering 10% off all products in my online Full Script supplement dispensary. September 17th and 18th, 2 days only, get 10% off and free shipping on my entire inventory of top supplements at drhoffmanstore.com. We stock only the highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere, the very same supplements I prescribe to my patients and take myself. It's the safest and most convenient way to purchase my curated supplements. Buying through FullScript offers fast, free shipping and optional refill reminders via text or email. Never counterfeit or expired. Always stored and shipped correctly. It's safe, secure, and includes world-class customer service. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com for 10% off and free shipping for 2 days only, September 17th and 18th. That's drhoffmanstore.com, drhoffmanstore.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Dr. Rob Verkirk is our guest today. He is executive director of ANH-USA.org, the Alliance for Natural Health. He also holds a position as head of and founder of ANH International, which is a pan-European international NGO dedicated to promoting and protecting natural approaches to healthcare. He's doing the same stateside now. And I'm reading your lengthy CV. I don't want to use up all our valuable time reading your lengthy CV, but this is something I didn't know about you, is that you're responsible for eradicating termites in the UK without using toxic, you know, poisonous chemicals. Tell me about that.
Good God. How did you discover that? Yes, it is a bit of a sideline of mine.
Are you like the Pied Piper of termites?
I spent 12 years in Australia, with a focus dedicated to reducing the use of pesticides, and both in agriculture and in domestic homes. And of course, I basically had arrived in Australia, taking time out before resuming a master's and PhD at Imperial College London. And I ended up staying not 6 months, but 12 years. And during that time, I worked with the Total Environment Center and then set up a company to develop methods of, alternative approaches to managing pests that were otherwise vast amounts of chemicals were being used. So one of them was the area of termites. And we were pioneers in the development of baiting systems and the use of botanical oils and other techniques. We also were very involved in architectural design. So I wrote a book about it, which was published in 1989, called Building Out Termites. And the basis of that was then included in Australian standards. Wow. So while I was back at Imperial College, minding my own business as a agricultural researcher working in Africa and elsewhere, it was actually the head of my research group who had said, Rob, we saw on the news that a termite infestation has been found in Britain. I kind of nearly fell off my chair in Britain. And on the BBC News, they said there was going to be a committee formed to deal with it. And so he said to me, don't you think you should contact these guys in the government and check they know what they're doing? So I rung them up and they said, yes, please come along to this ad hoc meeting. And I found basically the head of Dow AgriSciences termite division, the head of Rentokil's termite division, all basically, you know, drooling at the mouth at the thought that they were going to suddenly see a new market in the United Kingdom where they could get lots and lots of publicity for having used their nasty chemicals. So I looked at the site where these termites had supposedly been found. It was right on a sloping sandy site, right next to what is called a site of special scientific interest, a very delicate environmental area. And I mentioned that there could be a small-scale environmental disaster if they were going to use thousands of liters of chemicals. Cutting a long story short, I then got appointed as the scientific director of this program. And of course, we did it the scientific way. We did the full taxonomy of the termites. We did the genotyping of the termites so we could see exactly where they came from, that they came from the Pyrenean area of Southern Europe. We then used the very same baiting system at an extreme intensity that I'd developed in Australia, under the lens of, you know, I think there was 1 year where I was the third most reported on scientist at Imperial College, the other two being involved, dare I say it, in artificial intelligence, because there was so much publicity. But it's been a very slow process, it was last October, we successfully eliminated all the termites, having gone 10 years without any evidence of termites there. I believe it's a world first, because if you look at any of the ingression of termites, the primary kind of mover of termites into new areas is usually by vectoring by humans. Yep. We carry them in on other substrates. Mm-hmm. So I believe it is the first successful eradication. And of course, from my point of view, it was just nice that we didn't use thousands of liters of chemical.
So you're responsible for saving the ancient timbers of Westminster Abbey single-handedly? You've not received a knighthood yet? I'm waiting for it.
Yeah. No, you see, Westminster Abbey is in London, exists on clay soil. So it's very interesting that this particular termite infestation was found in the southwest of Britain, okay. which has very sandy soils, which are akin to the type that the termite hails from originally. Okay. So it's one of the reasons that the UK, that, you know, the southeastern side of the UK that is closest to to France and the channel crossing Dover-Calais has probably not had any infestations.
Well, Paris. I would hate to find termites on my blanket at Brighton Beach. You know, that would really be a bummer.
Exactly. But Paris is being consumed by them. There are huge problems because it's, you know, they are just eating their way through foundations. So they're definitely a big problem going on. And the concern is obviously not to use vast amounts of chemicals.
So let's switch gears to talk a little bit about some political initiatives that our organization, the Alliance for Natural Health, is contemplating and is actually really developing some very coherent plans for. The setting is that there was a decision by the Supreme Court which essentially reverses the Chevron decision. The Chevron decision gives a lot of discretion to agencies of the executive branch, of the federal government, to craft regulations that sometimes don't make a lot of sense, that really infringe on players in the natural products industry and have really hamstrung efforts to develop innovative supplements, for example. So tell us a little bit about, give us some background on that and what that opportunity provides to us.
Yeah, so it's more, Chevron deference obviously came into play in 1984 with the Chevron case that was taken by the Natural Resources Defense Council. And this was linked to a pollution problem by Chevron. And the decision was, the challenge was, is the pollution coming from a particular plant enough to consider on its own, or do you need to look at Chevron as and all their refineries and their total pollution output? And of course, this was deemed to be a complex problem, and deference was then given on the back of that case to the EPA to make its own decision, given the legal ambiguity over regulations created in Congress. So,
to summarize, Congress sets up these agencies, provides them with a budget. They get appropriations every year, and they get a mandate. But the mandate is rather, you know, go ahead and regulate. And then there's the rulemaking process by which they sometimes, you know, make it up as they go along, you know.
So it's the rulemaking, and it's the guidance, and it's the enforcement, and it's the penalties that those face in relation to that. So fundamentally, whenever there is ambiguity, essentially the agencies are able to make a determination what they consider. So essentially it gives them carte blanche to
a regulatory state. This creates a regulatory state that is actually a fourth branch of government in effect.
Exactly. So on the 28th of June, when it was overturned in the Loperbright case, Loperbright Enterprises, Raimondo versus Raimondo, in essence, what happens is the courts are now need to determine where that sits. And of course, that puts us in a situation where the court has to review objectively the available evidence, and then it will start to create essentially a battery of case law that will give us a much, much clearer view and should prevent overreach. Now, critical to that process is the idea of getting lots of cases into court that cement a pretty decent view in order to give legal clarity and avoid the legal uncertainty that otherwise exists. So, big news 3 months ago in A&H is that Jonathan E. Maude, ACCA, the FDA dragon slayer, just 2 weeks ago, he incidentally had his 13th successful case against the FDA, more than any other attorney has ever achieved in history. Jonathan, who's been our external counsel, has successfully taken six cases for us over the last 15, 20 years, is now our general counsel.
Wow.
So he comes in-house. So it's a huge step in the right direction. Some of you may recall that Jonathan was making a run for the Senate. All of this happened quite simply because when he didn't quite make it, because you will understand that the American political scene is pay to play, and he didn't pay enough. Someone else, his competitor in the Republican primaries, did.
And there was a big mishmash. It was like 11 candidates, and it was like, it just divided the vote.
Yeah, so I sent him my commiserations and also sent him a draft of a paper that we have been working on that basically has been researching drug and food definitions and all their subcategories over 18 different jurisdictions around the world over a 120-year period. And what it is a remarkable piece of work that shows you the nature of regulatory capture, particularly by big food and big pharma. He was so inspired. He said, "Rob, we have to talk." And there started a series of conversations between Jonathan and myself. And when I said, "Jonathan, what are you going to do next?" He said, "You know what? I would love nothing more than to work with you because you're a scientist that really understands the regulatory side. I'm a lawyer who really understands the science side. Put us together and we can do stuff that no one else can do." So to be honest, we have been working around the clock already for the last 3 months, developing an incredibly exciting strategy moving forward in this post-Chevron environment that we deal with. It's really critical. We've already seen one bill come through that is an attempt to reinstate essentially agency deference over regulatory ambiguity.
Yeah, because they want to close that loophole. They say, okay, well, the Supreme Court ruled this, but now we're going to fix that. We're going to do a legislative fix to button that up. And so that's coming from certain segments of the Democratic Party who basically want to hold the prerogative of agencies to regulate us into oblivion.
Look, I would love the agencies to do that if we could trust the agencies.
Yeah, exactly.
But the difficulty is it is not just the agencies that are captured. It is every facet of the system. If you start diving into what happens in coroner's courts when you're looking at autopsies and you're looking at the role of drugs, or even the other side of it, natural products and causative agents, or in death, or contributory agents to death, you'll see that you deal with capture again. And of course, capture works in many, many different ways. At some level, it can be a direct conflict of interests. It can be because someone used to work in an agency and now works in industry, or vice versa. But it also works at a really subtle, more indirect level, which is now linked to the kind of information that people in agencies are exposed to. So, and of course, they're going to be as vulnerable as anyone else. If they are following, you know, CNN news, they're going to have a particular view of the world that may be somewhat incomplete, because we know that there is a lockstep strategy acting through all the mainstream, APP, Reuters, and the rest of them, that give a particular view of the world that is usually self-serving in terms of the interests who want power and control. So it is really critical that we continue to have some faith in the courts and allow the courts to make decisions based on evidence. And at the same time, we need to make sure that some of the, you know, if you look at the many cases that were taken since COVID erupted in March of 2020, many of them have been lost because they haven't been put together as well as they might have done. The easiest trick in the book for your opponent is to say, sorry, we're not going to look at the content and mm-hmm. the evidence within yeah. your case, because there, you don't
there's
have
some procedural standing. Flaw in, you know, jurisdictional yada yada. Do you have standing to bring the suit? And you really have to be an expert legal champion to undertake these kinds of things. So that's what we have in Jonathan Emord.
Yeah, in Jonathan Emord, we have that in spades. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the reasons, you know, the only limitation really we have moving forward is oil in the machine. And it's one of the reasons that we are really priming people to say, this is the best time you could think about donating to A&H, particularly to our 501c4 fund, which is our lobbying and litigation fund, because that allows us to use it directly for legal actions. For people who have businesses, that can be a business expense, so it can be a write-off against tax. Mm-hmm. If you want to give to our 501c3, which is the A&H Foundation, that covers all the educational work we do. And you can understand that moving forward, there is a massive educational job that needs to be done in order that people can understand, not only how vital natural medicine is, but also what kind of threats it's under.
So our efforts are really threefold. It's number one, educational, you know, simply getting the word out, about innovations in natural healthcare, but also threats to our access to practitioners or care of our choice. We've had campaigns to allow for the licensure of certified nutrition specialists in various states where there's a monopoly by registered dietitians, and certified nutrition specialists bring personalized medicine to the fore with a little more advocacy for natural interventions, not simply at the beck and call of doctors as kind of, providing ensure to patients in hospitals. Not to discredit the many RDs who are nutritionally innovative. As a matter of fact, one of Jonathan Emord's cases that comes to mind is many years ago. He defended a very, very gifted registered dietitian who ran into trouble at the ADA, the American Dietetics Association, because she espoused the use of vitamins. It was that controversial. And they actually expelled her. And she called Jonathan Emord, and Jonathan Emord said, we're going to push back against that. And they won that case. She was reinstated. That was Dr. Sherry Lieberman, the late Dr. Sherry Lieberman, who was a good colleague of mine here in New York. The other thing we do, obviously, is, you know, we're looking for opportunities to, in the wake of the Chevron decision, to, find cases that help us to push back against the regulatory state.
and to support innovative companies and practitioners. But also, we have a political outreach. And there, believe it or not, are sympathetic congresspersons. I can think of one, Dr. Ron Johnson from the state of Wisconsin, is a believer in natural therapy. He's been very critical of our approach to COVID. And there are a few others. They're few and far between, but we have allies in Congress. And we put out action alerts to our membership so that they can call their congressperson or call the president or whoever's, you know, has purview over a particular situation and can leverage their rights as citizens to, you know, to persuade legislators to do the right thing.
Exactly. One of the cases that we will be filing in the near future is actually to try and offset the technical ban on homeopathy.
Okay.
And of course, what's interesting is that goes back all the way to Flexner at the beginning of the early part of the 20th century.
The so-called reform of medicine, you know, where they tried to modernize medicine, put it into the scientific era. And in effect, they were in competition with homeopathy because homeopathy was very vibrant in those days. They had a homeopathic medical college, Hahnemann Medical College, and was exclusively to educate homeopaths.
And of course, it's come back and been doing very, very well from a sort of patient perspective during COVID. But in essence, what the FDA has been doing is borrowing the playbook from the European Union. So in Europe, we, as of 2004, essentially what the EU Parliament decided together with the European Commission is that if you want to sell a homeopathic product, you need to put it through what is termed a simplified market authorization, a simplified drug license.
Mm-hmm.
And they created, despite the fact that it had this term simplified in it, it was so incoherent, it was so poorly suited to the specific nature of the manufacturer of homeopathic products that no company has been able to negotiate that at all. So that's something that, you know, here is another situation of massive legal ambiguity in the sense that, you know, that there appears to be a ban. There isn't an enormous amount of enforcement. But if you are a homeopathic practitioner, and more so if you are a homeopathic manufacturer, what kind of environment?
It's kind of a legal limbo. It's totally. Right. And the same thing is happening actually in the CBD realm. And I've noticed that, you know, many of the companies that purvey CBD, with the exception of one of my sponsors, CV Sciences, you know, plus CBDOil.com, they're retreating from the CBD market because of regulatory uncertainty. They're not sure where it's going to go. It almost seems like a deliberate effort to keep the regulations kind of, you know, like quicksand under the feet of the manufacturers, so that they don't invest too highly in CBD products.
It's a well-known technique that the FDA use, and obviously NMN is another example. So we have just launched a couple of weeks ago in conjunction with the Natural Products
Nicotinamide mononucleotide, which is similar to nicotinamide riboside in supporting NAD as an anti-aging energetic therapy. Yep.
Correct.
Mitochondrial support. Yep.
Exactly. So we've just launched a legal action together with NPA. And we'll keep you posted on how that progresses. But again, that was because of an investigational new drug application that was put in through David Sinclair's company.
Mm-hmm.
It essentially made all of the dietary supplements versions of NMN, which is a $4.6 million dollar industry in the US alone. So it puts that whole industry at risk.
So I noticed something interesting. I was watching TV the other day, and I was watching just a cable station, and I saw an ad for Iberogast. Now, you're familiar with Iberogast because it's a tried and true traditional remedy for all manner of GI upset. And it's a wonderful combination of herbs that has a stomach soothing effect. And I said, that's great. And then I looked, and there was a little logo, you know, and buried at the corner of the screen, and it said Bayer, Bayer, and what it suggests. And I said, oh my goodness, it looks like these big pharmaceutical companies are gobbling up some of these natural products, and they're in a position to go through these regulatory hurdles because they have very, very good connections with the FDA, with the FTC. They have large compliance departments, and basically they know how to go along to get along, whereas small, nimble, innovative companies just don't have the economy of scale. They don't have the bandwidth to deal with all these regulatory hurdles.
It's another dimension of capture. So
capture, yes.
If you can't beat them, you join them. Mm-hmm. So Nestlé, as a huge food corporation, is now very, very interested in all of this area. It has, for example, bought the dietary supplement company Pure Encapsulation.
Yeah.
That's one of the most significant practitioner brands out there for dietary supplements. So yes, exactly. That is the kind of environment that we will be dealing with. Many of these companies are probably going to be quite happy to lose a significant proportion of their SKUs, of their product portfolio. Most companies, you know, the vast majority of the money that they make arises from probably just 20% of their catalog.
So fewer options for consumers, in effect.
Yeah. So from a healthcare point of view, it's deeply worrying, because if you are, you know, part of the 80% that might suffer attrition over time, that might be a vital product for someone's, you know, survival even. And perhaps a good example of that is what's happening to natural thyroid extracts and natural adrenal extracts. People who are, you know, Melanie, our executive coordinator mm-hmm. at A&H, is a good example. Someone who has had a thyroidectomy when she was young as a result of Graves' disease. And she cannot, if she takes just synthetic T4, which is what mainstream medicine will prescribe, she gets very, very ill. She needs the T3 and the reverse T3 that's mm-hmm. present in natural extracts. Many of the natural, you know, desiccated thyroid extract companies have now been either taken over by large corporations or even shut down.
No.
It's very, very difficult for people like Melanie to be able to source those products. So, even the products that seem to be less important in terms of total sales can be absolutely indispensable.
Yeah. For some. And we're also talking bioidentical hormones, you know, where instead of a one-size-fits-all option for women, practitioners like myself can customize via compounding pharmacies various types of estrogen with natural progesterone, perhaps with a small amount of testosterone or DHEA, and really dial it in to each patient's needs. Drug companies are saying, oh, this is voodoo medicine. This is unsafe. You know, we have patent medications that do the job just fine. And women who take them, you know, often don't find relief from their menopausal symptoms.
No, I think that is a classic example of how deceptive the information can be. It's very difficult to see, you know, case control studies or even case reports of people who have been on BHRT, bioidentical hormone replacement, rather than synthetic hormone replacement. But the clinical experience from those who use it is absolutely huge, which is one of the reasons we've always had support from the public and support from practitioners who prescribe and support from compounders. But the FDA, what they tend to do is go after the compounders first and foremost, because that's how these, if you like, personalized prescriptions can be developed, and they are very much under threat. It's also the reason why they're attacking now peptides for compounding rather than necessarily going after some of the dietary supplement versions. That will come in due course.
Well, it sounds like a very, very ambitious portfolio. And I know that you are working steadfastly with superhuman efforts to pull this all together. We need additional support from our constituency, the public, also health practitioners and product developers. So for more information about the important work of the Alliance for Natural Health and to donate, just go to drhoffman.com/ANH. And I've created a special portal there, drhoffman.com/ANH, because I'll be contributing, I'll be matching all donations up to a total of 5,000. And if you want to see me and raise me 5,000, I can go there. That's okay. We'll match all your donations.
Fantastic, you know. Ron. Thank you so much for doing that. Talk about putting your money where your mouth is.
For me, this is very important because I feel that this is like legacy work because, you know, I can do a lot, lifting up patients one by one, but, by benefiting the entire community, I think I can leave a more, lasting and permanent legacy. So that's what I'm up to. Rob, thanks for your Herculean efforts. Keep up the great work. We'll talk soon as ANH continues moving forward. And good luck in Washington. I hear you're headed to Washington to have some meetings, perhaps walk the halls of Congress.
We will be. We've got meetings with the EPA. We've got meetings with lawyers, and we've got meetings with NPA and other organizations there. So it's going to be a busy week next week. But Ron, thank you so much for taking the time to have this discussion again.
Absolutely. And also check out our freespeechforhealth.org campaign, free speech with a number for health.org. Thanks very much for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
I want to thank you for listening to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or your favorite podcast app, and get new episodes automatically downloaded every weekday. And please give us a rating and review. It truly helps new people discover intelligent medicine. The Intelligent Medicine Podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice, and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of information on this podcast or materials linked from this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition they may have and should seek the assistance of their healthcare professionals for any such conditions. Finally, please visit drhoffman.com and discover everything Intelligent Medicine has to offer, including frequently updated, unbiased health news and fully vetted product and supplement recommendations.